Let's first start, take a look at a broader look at the macro indicators, the macroeconomic type conditions that exist within agriculture today in the U.S. Some basic kinds of facts to start with. First of all, as you can see over the course of time since for the last 100 years, there's been a very dramatic change in the number of farms that exist within the U.S. Coupled with the number of people that work on farms, there's been a significant change in the population in production agriculture. So as late as the 1950s, there were almost three times as many farms that exist actually today in the U.S., and less than 2% of our population actually works in agriculture at this stage. This shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. In fact, is probably a very common occurrence globally. However, I would suggest that over the course of the last two or three decades, there has been a dramatic shift in the U.S. toward higher productivity, which has driven fewer and fewer production farmers as a part of the market. And you'll see in a moment when we talk about the number of farms and the makeup of those farms, the impact on production agriculture of a relatively small number of producers is fairly significant. So, in the U.S., there are 2.2 million farms. And this, is from the 1992 census, just updated, or 2002 census, just recently updated by the 2007 census, where the number of farms actually increased for the first time in some time in the U.S. marketplace. Now, the farms that actually did increase were limited to those very small farms that exist throughout our marketplace. The USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, counts farms for anybody that holds. Anybody that produces up to over $1,000 worth of production in the marketplace. So, when we talk about production agriculture, we're not really talking about the great number of farms that exist in the U.S. today. Over 95% of farms today generate less than $500,000 in annual sales. And in fact, the large scale farms account for less, which are less than 10% of the total number of farms, account for over 75% of the production value of agriculture today. So what you see is a very significant a bifurcation, if you will, of the marketplace within the U.S. market. You have a handful of significant agricultural producers that drive most of the production, and then you have a significant number of small part-time producers, sundowners, whatever your name is to describe those people, that are truly agriculture is not their primary vocation. And as a result, we have a significant number of farms, but only really a few that impact the majority of the major production of agricultural goods within the U.S. A couple of other points. The number of value of production, as you can see in the lower graph on the right side, is driven almost entirely by family farms. And there has been over the years a contention that corporate farming has become a very significant part of agriculture in the U.S. That's really not the case. Most of agriculture today remains a family farm type of activity. Now, they may be very big and they may be very extensive, but in most cases they remain family operations. Let's talk a little bit more about production, where it's done, and some of the impacts of the concentration of agriculture in the U.S. as well. So these graphics portray the primary location of some key commodity production activities within the U.S. In the upper left-hand corner of the screen is corn for grain. So those are harvested acres from 2007. And you see a very strong concentration of corn production, which is a very significant crop, obviously, in the U.S., within the Midwest. The northern parts of the Midwest, the northern plains, one of the very significant changes relative to corn production over the years has been a slight move west. So if you consider the change in the types of varieties, the type of seed varieties, the type of agricultural practices, and the types of activities that that produce value for producers, you're finding a little shift to the west in the corn production cycle, more from the traditional Iowa, Illinois, Indiana type locations. And that's been a fairly significant change, particularly over the last couple of years. Below that is soybeans. And soybeans harvested acres are typically very much located where corn is, with a little bit deeper concentration in the south, in the delta area, but typically follows a corn production cycle where there's a great quite a bit of rotation between the two crops. Wheat, on the other hand, is typically a plains-type crop, so you see most of the production throughout the central and northern plains, with the scattered production elsewhere, either in double crop activities or in specific targeted types of wheat production. And finally, cotton. Cotton remains a fairly significant crop within the U.S., although the last couple of years there's been a very dramatic drop in acreage of cotton production based on world prices. But typically that's concentrated in places like Texas, in the western plains of Texas, as well as the Mississippi Delta and the southeast. You see a bit of that in California still, in parts of the west, but typical concentration around cotton production in those areas identified. Now let's talk about a couple of the primary crops within the U.S. today. First of all, corn and soybeans. 2009-2010 crop year, we planted about just over 32 million hectares of corn in the U.S. That was up slightly from last year's crop production, but down quite dramatically from the 2007-2008 crop production year when, driven by a very significant cost or price run-up at that period in time, and then a fallback as we went into the 08-09 crop year. Yield is typically over 10 tons per hectare, which continues to increase over time. And although these prices, I think more recently, have improved, price for corn typically is around that mid-$3 to $4 range for a bushel of corn. More recently, in the case of much of our commodities, we've seen a fairly dramatic run-up in the last several months in commodity prices, which we'll talk about a little bit more, but has the implications of greater opportunity for equipment manufacturers as we look ahead. Soybeans and corn typically, acreage is typically relatively similar, particularly over the last several years. About 31 million hectares planted in 2009-2010, up slightly from the year previously, and up more dramatically from the year before that when corn commanded so many additional acres in the marketplace. Yields upwards of 3 tons per hectare, and prices today are exceeding $10 a bushel, and these prices for both corn and soybeans over the last 3 or 4 years have been obviously dramatically different than the historical context of that if you go back to the early 2000s and the 1990s. A little bit more on corn. And corn has been one of those crops that's, from a global perspective, has had a dramatic impact on on agricultural production probably everywhere for a variety of reasons. These are the use components of corn production within the U.S. Over a given year. And historically, you will see that the majority of corn continues to be used for feed. And so whether it's cattle, poultry, hogs, corn production has primarily been a function of livestock feed requirements. Exports have always held a very important part of the U.S. Corn production system and have been relatively stable over the years, growing slightly at certain points in time. But the big change that has occurred in the corn production since the, frankly, since the early part of this past decade was corn for ethanol. And although there's historically been any number of industrial uses of corn in the U.S. Marketplace, whether it's for industrial uses, plastics, or high fructose syrup, there's a number of industrial uses for corn. The growth in ethanol has been significant and dramatic over just the last 5 years. And you will see that since the 2003-2004 time period when it took off and has been supported by a government mandate to achieve a certain level of renewable fuels production within the U.S., there's been a fairly significant change. We would expect that to level off over time as we reach the current targeted level of production of that. So this is not a long, not a continued dramatic rise in use, but will level off as we get closer to 2015 and meeting the current renewable fuel standards. This obviously has had a number of implications on corn prices, particularly in the last several years. Demand, though, has as it has increased through the addition of ethanol to the marketplace, has been in many cases, and particularly last year and the last 2 years, has been proven to be offset by increased production capability by farmers within the U.S. And so increased acreages, increased yields, dramatic increase in yields over the past several years has really served to not only allow us to be able to grow corn for feed use and exports, but also now support a viable renewable fuels opportunity through through the corn production. Now, it's important in the U.S. to also consider the impact on livestock on agriculture. The about half of gross farm income for farmers within the U.S. today comes from livestock. The other half comes from grain. So it is about a 50-50 split between the contribution of proceeds from dairy, beef, hogs, and other livestock to the broader agricultural opportunity. And here as well, we are seeing certain concentrations of production of livestock as in the U.S. market. So milk cows in the upper left-hand corner has shown over the years has evolved to, of course, a very strong production area around the Great Lakes, around the Lakes region in the north central part of the U.S., and also historically a very significant production in California as well. Certain recent growth in places in the plains in New Mexico and Texas has also added to the differing industry look. On the right, upper right, are hogs and pigs, and you see a concentration of those as well in the Midwest. And typically in Iowa, Minnesota, these places where they continue to be produced, but also fairly significant concentrations on the East Coast and North Carolina as well. And then beef cows, which would include not only cows being fed, but also cow-calf type operations, are pretty much scattered throughout the U.S. with concentration in the Plain States, east central type markets of the U.S. So, beef cows continue to be broadly spread out around the U.S. However, there's quite a difference between the concentration of fed cattle and the concentration of cow calf type operations, where fed cattle tend to be more concentrated in larger operations, while cow-calf operations are spread out more broadly. Now, if you think about the location of where things are produced and then apply to that the value of the crops themselves or the production, the products themselves, you see a specific kinds of concentration of gross receipts that come from agriculture that exist across the U.S. in our markets. First of all, if you look at the top 10 farming states by cash receipts, California remains the largest agricultural producer in the U.S. Has been for a long time, probably will be for a long time. The concentration not only of traditional crops, but also a great number of specialty type crops, including orchards, vineyards, vegetables, fruits, those kinds of things, which contribute obviously a great deal of value to the production system within California. It continues to be the largest agricultural production state within the United States. But you also see a range of concentration based on different components of agriculture that exists in other states as well. So you would clearly understand the upper Midwest, the Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin, concentration of corn, soybean, and hogs and cattle production drives a very concentration of agriculture in those markets. The plain states, including Texas, a concentration of activities there. And then North Carolina and particularly Florida. Here in Florida, a very strong specialty crop type market, citrus, sugarcane, other production systems that add real value. So if you see the broader range of, on the upper left hand is a chart showing the receipts of products and the concentration of cattle and calves, you see the impact of livestock on the overall receipts to the marketplace with cattle and calves and dairy products contributing almost a third by themselves of the total receipts in agriculture today. And then you can see the application of those in the lower left-hand slide, the application by county within the U.S., by county, by state, of where the dramatic impacts are. So agriculture remains a fairly widespread activity within the U.S., with certain concentrations depending on the types of crops or products grown driving the impact on the regional arena. Now, the other area that is particularly important to understand about U.S. agriculture is farm financial conditions. And this has been tracked for any number of years and continues to be a significant indicator of the health of agriculture and particularly producers within the U.S. If you go back to the 1980s, the farm crisis of the 1980s in the U.S. was a dramatic time, and it's not a surprise if you look at some of the critical financial indicators on this graph. A very high level of debt across the agricultural production areas, and very low levels of income. That combined for a particularly difficult decade within agriculture. But you can see that since then, and farmers tend to have long memories, and as a result, debt remains a targeted arena to keep under control. And at the same time, since the early part of this decade, we've seen a dramatic increase in net income. So combination of these two, we believe continues to show a very strong vibrancy within agriculture. And frankly, it's a good indicator of how agriculture has withstood the impact of the global economic crisis probably better than any other industry that exists out there today. Now, the big drop in income in 2009 is really a function of two things. One is coming off some dramatic prices that occurred in 2008, and also the run-up in input costs that drove 2009 production structure to be much different than it had been previously, and frankly, much different than it is going into 2010. Input costs, and particularly fertilizer, fuel, rose dramatically, and that put a squeeze on margins for customers. And as a result, we showed a fairly significant drop in income. But with the settling back of input costs and some stabilization in prices going forward, I think there's a fairly high level of confidence that income, in fact, is going to recover. May not, it probably won't get to the recovery point of 2008, but it certainly will be better than 2009 in that regard. So there is some optimism, continued strength within the industry that bodes well for the overall equipment manufacturing environment. So let's talk a little bit now about the impact. That was kind of a macro look at agriculture. Let's look a little bit more at the industry itself here in the U.S. First of all, some basic kinds of facts, if you will. Agricultural manufacturing industry represents about over $80 billion in revenue. Exports over $6 billion in goods beyond the U.S., employs around 250,000 people, and although it's not a significant part of GDP within the U.S., and it's a relatively low percentage of total GDP, its regional economic influence is significant. So if you go to places where agriculture is particularly strong, the Midwest, parts of California, other places, agriculture is a very significant component of overall economic value and continues to be. And as a result, we'll always have a very strong support structure, not only within the industry itself, but certainly within government that's responsible for those specific areas. Now, let's talk a little bit about the business itself. And we'll start with tractors. You can see the trends over time after a number of years. And on the left side of the chart, you see tractors less than 100 horsepower. And an interesting kind of confluence of activities over the course of the last 10 to 20 years in under 100 horsepower tractors has driven a fairly significant growth in that market. You could attribute that to lots of different issues, including the rise of the smaller farm, part-time farms, those kinds of activities. Clearly, there's a strength in that marketplace, although that's come off a bit the last couple of years and seems to be stabilizing a bit more. On the right side are the larger tractors, over 100 horsepower tractors and four-wheeler drive tractors. And you see a more stable type of environment, if you will, over the course of the last 20 years, and coming out of the 70s when the numbers were dramatic for everybody, they've settled back to, I think what we would consider more normal type numbers, with a couple of spikes representing times of particular strength in the agricultural production sector. So if you go back to the early 90s, 1997, 1998, and then more recently in 2007, 2008, you see strong growth there driven primarily by financial success within the agricultural sector. Combines also reflect similarly what we saw with tractors coming out of the 70s, a very dramatic drop in the overall industry. And frankly, I know many of you that experienced, have been around agriculture for some time, can appreciate the impact on the equipment industry of a dramatic drop in the sales of these core kinds of products and the impact on the overall industry. There was quite some consolidation, if you will, of the equipment industry during the 80s, and it's not a secret why that happened if you look at these kinds of numbers. You also see a fairly stable type of environment in combine sales over the course of the last number of years. This is particularly interesting because if you look at the same kind of time period, the capacity for combines has grown dramatically. And so the combination of increased capacity, fewer farmers, and higher production levels have kind of evened out the numbers over time, but even in the face of some dramatic change in the overall type of business that exists. Couple of other points about retail sales, and this is a snapshot of the November end numbers that AEM gathers throughout the industry and provides for the industry. A couple of key points in this. 2009, obviously, coming off of a very strong 2008, if you remember that income number that we looked at before, the net income drop in 2009, you can see that reflected in equipment sales in 2009, coming off of 2008. 2008 was probably an extraordinary year. It was probably a unique type of year when you combined a relatively low input cost at the beginning of the year and very high prices. Those kinds of things don't happen very often. As a result, there was a fairly significant demand, frankly, for most kinds of products. That came back quite a bit in 2009. You see that impact. I'll draw your attention to the graph at the bottom of the page, though, because I think what you see here, there's a certain cycle that occurs, a certain seasonality that exists in the U.S. Sales of equipment. And you see a very strong sales activity through the spring season. And then it tends to tail off with a bit of a spike in the fall harvest type period, the October type of a period. See a bit of a spike back then, but it typically a high percentage of sales of, let's say, tractors and combines are accomplished through about the first half of the year, the first 6 months of a year. And with a bit of an improvement after that. So spring seasons, the optimism for a new year, the outlook that exists drives demand at a unique level in our industry. Yeah, a couple of other points. If you look at the 09 numbers versus 08, a couple of things are interesting here. One is even though broadly tractors have seen a fairly significant decline, particularly in the smaller tractors after a big run-up over the years previously, large equipment like four-wheel drive tractors and like combines have not seen that same kinds of decline. So you're seeing continued replenishment of larger machines by key producers. And as land has continued to be consolidated under larger production systems, the demand for highly productive equipment continues, and it will be one of those impacts that will drive our industry for quite some time. So that leads us really to a wrap up. What are some of the implications of this market that we're seeing within the U.S.? There are any number of drivers of new technology innovation within the industry, but a couple that come to mind that are fairly significant in their impact would be this drive toward efficiency, the drive toward productivity that exists within this relatively small segment of farmers that drive the vast majority of the production within the U.S. around the grains. So if you think about farmers are getting larger all the time, their impacts they have negative impacts on their overall business opportunity around labor. Labor is difficult to find, particularly good labor is difficult to find. And as a result, people are trying to do more themselves, whether it's bigger, faster, wider type equipment or whatever it is that drives that. But there are some very specific demands if you think about the economics of agriculture that are changing the requirements of equipment producers going forward. And we would expect that to continue over time. And there are some very significant ones activities that are driving this and outcomes that are going to be necessary. We've already talked about the impact of ethanol, corn-based ethanol within the U.S. marketplace. But clearly, there continues to be more and more research and investments made in biofuels in general. So it's moving beyond the just corn for ethanol type of environment to a next generation biofuels, if you will, whether it's in ethanol, it's in biodiesel, or other components of comparable type of biofuels. The move toward more cellulosic approach to the business, including the need for being able to harvest that type of equipment, that type of product, is driving new research and technological innovation, and that's happening today in the marketplace. One of the things about cellulosic ethanol, or the application of cellulosic ethanol, is that the demand for the types of material, the raw material required to be able to support the amount that is targeted is fairly dramatic. and the accumulation, packaging, transport, and all those kinds of things of that product becomes a very significant issue, given the infrastructure is not built for that type of thing today. So there's some interesting opportunities going forward, and certainly a lot of research innovation occurring in this area. Autonomy is becoming more and more a significant part of the discussion around producers today. So whether we at some point we'll have tractors that are operationally and engaged in many factors of agriculture that don't necessarily have to have a driver with them. There are any number of components of requirements that are needed to be able to support that over time. But clearly, as it relates to producers' requirements for better efficiency, less impact on requirement for labor, these kinds of things become more important in their thinking going forward, and people are starting to embrace these kinds of technologies. Many of you have been involved in ISOBUS. ISOBUS is a fairly dramatic change in what's going to happen in equipment and the impact on equipment going forward. The ability for implements and power vehicles to essentially talk to each other and manage the production system based on that offers a whole different level of opportunity and capability for manufacturers and will provide our customers, producers today, a different capability, and they're looking forward to those kinds of opportunities. The further commercialization of precision agriculture is very significant, continues to be significant in the U.S. Maybe one of the most dramatic impacts on agriculture in the last 10 years has been the evolution of guidance systems and the resulting application of variable rate application, geopositioning, guidance systems, and these kinds of things to the production agriculture. It has happened as quickly as any other type of innovation that's probably ever come across agriculture today. And it continues to be in the highest level of demand. It's one of those things that literally you can prove to customers, to producers, that their business will be better with these type of investments in these technologies. So we expect, and the industry expects, a much further acceptance and commercialization of these type of precision production practices going forward to support the overall business. And the combination of, consider that the combination with ISOBUS and other types of opportunities, and it creates a unique capability. And finally, there's any number of new technologies on the horizon that are being considered, not only for production, but for the safe operation of equipment and for monitoring. One of the newer discussions that is occurring within AEM recently has been the impact of telematics on agricultural equipment and how that will be managed going forward as it relates to information management flow and communication type technology. So there's a very significant opportunity here and a very interesting opportunity for manufacturers going forward as well. So that's a quick view of some of the key issues that we see driving U.S. agriculture in today's marketplace. A dramatically changing environment after a very significant, very extraordinary year, I would say, in 2008, coming back in 2009 and now 2010 with an ongoing opportunity for producers within the U.S. to continue to drive production for food, fiber, and now fuel at a different level and be able to meet those rising needs of, frankly, a hungry world going forward. So that is a brief overview of what's happening within the United States market today.